Isn't it amazing how something as basic as counting really can just blossom into incredibly beautiful art?
It really is. You think about traditional string art, right?
Exactly. You know, just a board, some nails, string.
Yeah.
But following simple rules, like how to connect those nails, you get these visually stunning images.
Yeah, that magic of simple steps leading to something complex and beautiful that's really captivating.
And what's fascinating is that this core idea, it finds this really powerful modern expression in something called electronic string art.
Ah, right. So taking it digital.
Exactly. And that's what we're deep diving into today. Forget the hammer and, you know, sore thumbs. This is a digital twist that offers just unbelievable flexibility and like instant visual feedback.
Oh, that's cool. So you can tweet a setting and just see it change right away.
Milliseconds, yeah. Imagine doing that with actual nails and string.
Right, yeah. Traditional string art is pretty committed. Yeah. You place a nail, that's it. Changes are a big deal.
Totally. So this electronic version offers this wonderful fluidity. You can just experiment endlessly, no physical constraints.
Makes sense.
So, okay, our mission for this deep dive is to explore the fundamental principles and the surprisingly rich mathematical connections within this electronic string art world.
And we're doing that based on a specific source.
We are. We're using a fantastic new book by Steve Erfel called Electronic String Art, Rhythmic Mathematics.
Okay.
And Steve brings an interesting perspective, actually. He's an economics professor.
Oh, interesting.
Who clearly has this passion for exploring, you know, the intersections between different fields.
Okay, so that brings up a question for me, and probably for listeners, how math heavy is this? Do you need a degree to get it?
That's a great question, and it's one of the real strengths of Erfel's book, actually. It's designed to be interactive and honestly pretty accessible.
Okay.
You absolutely do not need to be a math whiz to dive in and enjoy creating these images. He provides electronic files.
Ah, tools.
Yeah, for both Excel and just a web browser. And they let you generate your own string art just by playing with a few key parameters.
So you just fiddle with the numbers and see what happens.
Exactly. The book even has QR codes that take you right to these tools. It's very hands-on.
Nice. So it's really about exploring, even digitally.
Precisely. And the core of this exploration, it comes down to four key parameters. Yeah. They're like the control knobs, N, S, P, and J.
Okay, let's break those down. See N first.
Right. N, that's the number of vertices. Think of them as the anchor points, the dots around the edge that define the basic shape.
So like N3 gives you a triangle framework, N for a square.
You got it. 12 would be like a clock face. That's N, the foundation.
Okay, then J.
J stands for vertex jumps. This tells you how to connect those vertices. Instead of just going to the next one, you jump over a certain number of vertices before you draw the line.
Ah, okay. And that's how you get the star shapes, I bet.
Exactly. That jump pattern creates the stars.
Cool. What's it say?
S is the number of subdivisions per line. So imagine taking each straight line of that initial shape.
The ones made by N and J.
Right. And you divide each of those lines into S equal smaller segments.
Okay. So adding more potential points along the lines.
Yep. The higher S is, the more sort of fine detail you can potentially get.
Right. More places to connect things. Which brings us to P.
P is the final piece. It's the counting step. It tells the system which of all those little subdivision endpoints created by S to connect to form the final image. You start at one endpoint, count P endpoints along the way, draw a line there, repeat.
Okay, so N and J make the skeleton.
Yeah.
And S adds the points along the bones, and P tells you how to connect those points to make the curves and patterns.
That's a great way to put it. That's the core process.
Okay.
And to help you get started, the book has this section called Image Archetypes. It's like a gallery of examples.
Oh, nice.
Showing the incredible variety you can get just by tweaking those four letters. N, S, P, and J.
Gives you a starting point, some inspiration.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's dig into that vertex frame first. N and J. You said N is the number of vertices, like points on a circle.
Right. Equally spaced points, like N12 is the clock face analogy. And the convention in the book is always to start drawing or counting from the very top point and go clockwise. That consistency is important.
Yeah, keeps things predictable. So J, the jumps, how does that transform the simple polygon?
Okay, imagine you're at the top vertex of, say, a pentagon, so N5.
Okay.
If J1, you just connect to the next vertex clockwise, making the pentagon shape. But if J2,
you skip one.
You skip the next vertex and connect to the one after that. Then from there, you skip the next one, connect to the one after that. Keep doing that.
And you get a star. The pentagram.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's how Jay creates stars.
Now, the book mentions something about symmetry between Jay and NJ, right?
Yeah, that's a neat property.
Yeah.
If you have N vertices, jumping by Jay or jumping by NJ actually produces the exact same final image, the same static pattern.
Really? So like J2 in a pentagon N5 is the same image as J3, which is 5-2.
Visually, yes. The only difference is the direction the line travels as it draws the image. One goes clockwise, the other goes counterclockwise.
Oh, okay.
But to avoid redundancy, they usually just talk about stars where J is between 1 and N2.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps it simpler. Now, sometimes these stars aren't one continuous line, are they?
Correct. That happens when N and J share a common factor, you know, a number that divides both of them.
Like N6 and J2. Both are divisible by 2.
Exactly. Their greatest common divisor, the GCD, is 2, which is greater than 1. So instead of one continuous six-pointed star,
you get
two separate triangles. Multiple circuits, they call them.
Ah, okay. So for that single unbroken line star, N and J need to be, what's the term?
Relatively prime. Their GCD has to be 1.
Got it. The book also mentions rotating polygons. How does that relate?
That's a cool visualization trick when N is really close to a multiple of J.
Like N31 and J10. 31 is close to 3 times 10.
Right. The star you get can sort of look like a polygon in that case. Maybe a triangle that seems to rotate slightly with each connection.
Mm.
They suggest playing with the online tool, like compare N30 J10 to N31 J10. You see the shape shift. Same for N39 versus N41 with J10 for square.
Oh, I see. It helps you visually grasp that connection between N and J.
Yeah, it clicks better. And then there's this idea of divisible stars.
Okay.
This is subtle. Even if, say, N6 and J2 gives you 2 triangles because GCD is 2, if you draw a continuous star with a larger J value, like maybe N6, J1, which is just the hexagon.
Yeah.
Actually, bad example. Let's say you have a continuous NJ star. You might see the patterns of smaller non-continuous stars, like the NK ones where K is less than J,
yeah,
sort of embedded within the main star's lines.
So even if N6... J2 isn't continuous itself, its pattern might appear inside a larger continuous star using N6.
Something like that, yeah. The lines of the bigger star trace out those underlying shapes.
Interesting layering effect.
Definitely. Okay, so that's the foundation, N and J. Ready to add complexity with S and P?
Let's do it. Subdivisions and line creation. So S comes first.
Right. You've got your basic polygon or star frame from N and J. Now, you take every single one of those straight line segments
mm-hmm.
and divide it into S equal smaller segments. This creates S1 new points along each original line. We call all the points at the ends of these tiny segments subdivision endpoints.
Okay, so lots more points now. If S is like 10, you have 9 new points on each line segment.
Exactly. More S means more potential detail, more connection options.
And P is how we use those options.
Yep, P is the rule. Start at one subdivision endpoint. Count P endpoints along the entire perimeter of the shape, following the subdivided lines all the way around.
Okay, not just on one segment.
No, all the way around. And draw a line to that Pth endpoint. Then from that new endpoint, count another P along the perimeter. Draw the next line. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Okay. That's where the curves come from. You're connecting points that aren't necessarily adjacent on the original frame anymore.
Precisely. This process forms a cycle. You keep jumping by P until you get back to or very near where you started. The endpoint of that very first sequence of jumps is called E.
And E is important.
It seems to influence how the subsequent cycles fill in the image, yeah.
Okay. Now, the book mentions a subdivision common factor, SCF. Sounds mathematical. What does it tell us visually?
Right, SCF. The formula is a bit much, but it's basically the GCD of N times S divided by the GCD of N and J and P.
Okay.
But what it tells you is about the image density. It relates to how many of those potential subdivision points actually get used in the final drawing.
Ah, so a higher SCF might mean fewer points are hit. A sparser image.
Generally, yes. It's like a measure of efficiency. If N60, S10, J29, so N and J are coprime, their GCD is 1. The SCF calculated with P tells you how spread out or dense the resulting pattern will feel. It reveals how much of that potential detail from S actually makes it into the final picture.
Interesting. So it's not just abstract math. It predicts a visual quality.
Exactly. And a little shortcut they mention. If your P value is huge, bigger than the total number of subdivision points, which is S times N, you can just subtract S times N from P repeatedly until you get a smaller number. It'll make the exact same image because you're just wrapping around the circle extra time.
Right, landing on the same points eventually. Any simplification for S&P themselves?
Yeah, they suggest if S&P share a common factor, like if both are divisible by 3, you can divide both by 3 and get the same fundamental pattern, just scaled differently perhaps. Keep the ratio simple.
Okay.
Also, since connecting A to B is the same line as B to A, you can often use the smaller value between P and S&P to describe the same connection rule. Might make things easier to track.
Good tips. Okay, parameters down, let's talk visuals. Symmetry seems key.
Hugely key. Because that starting vertex frame is usually a regular polygon or a symmetric star, the final electronic string art images almost always have vertical symmetry. Cut them down the middle, top to bottom, and one side mirrors the other.
Makes sense. And what about that J vs. NJ thing again? Same image, different drawing direction.
Exactly. The final picture on the screen looks identical, whether you use J or NJ for the vertex jumps. But how it got drawn, the sequence of lines, is reversed. One clockwise, one counterclockwise.
Okay. The outline mentioned levels of subdivision points, too.
Right. Think about those points created by S along each line segment. You can sort of categorize them by how far they are from the original vertex. The book calls this the level, and the very first level you jump to, determined by P divided by S, specifically the remainder, M-O-D-P-S, they call that F, and that starting level F actually has a big impact on the overall look and texture of the final image. It's surprising.
Wow, okay. And swapping N and S, does that do anything predictable?
It often creates related images if you take the numbers you use for N and S and just swap them, keeping P and J the same or similar.
Like N11, S13 versus N13, S11.
Exactly that example from the book. You'll often see a kind of visual relationship, a shared structure or feel between the two resulting images. It's neat to compare them.
Okay, the variety sounds immense. Let's touch on some of those specific image types mentioned. Quivering polygons. Sounds intriguing.
They look it, too. These tend to show up when P is really close to S.
Okay.
And also, S itself is a multiple of J. That specific setup can create this optical effect where the corners or peaks of the main polygon shape seem to vibrate or quiver. It's static, but it looks like it's moving.
Whoa.
Yeah, they show an example like NPS1 with J10 making a square look like its corners are shimmering.
That's wild. Okay, spinning needle stars.
Yeah, these often have a sharp, spiky look. They're usually one-time around images.
Yeah.
The whole design is drawn in one continuous loop around the vertices exactly once.
Okay.
And they typically don't pass through the exact center point. The book says they often happen when there's a big difference between those levels of subdivision points we mentioned.
You can get four-pointed ones.
Apparently so.
Huh?
Which is kind of surprising. Maybe not what you first picture as a star.
Definitely not. Okay, how about N equal P images, setting those two parameters equal?
Right. When you make N equal to P, you often get these characteristic teardrop shapes appearing.
Teardrops?
Yeah, especially if S also equals J and they're both less than half of N. If S equals J but they're more than half of N, the shapes get bigger and tend to include the center.
And suspension curves are related to these.
They often appear within those NEP images. They look like pairs of graceful curves, almost parallel, that seem anchored at the same two points.
Like suspension bridge cables.
Exactly. Or power lines sagging between towers, that kind of look.
Cool visual. Lastly, 60-second images, one rotation.
Yep. Another type of one-time around image completes the whole pattern in a single cycle around the vertices. The 60-second name evokes that single turn, like the second hand on a clock.
Uh-huh.
Mathematically, these are often linked to something called modular multiplicative inverses, or MMI. It's a concept from number theory.
Okay, we'll get to that.
And there's often a cool reciprocal thing. If setting J and PB gives you a 60-second image, then swapping them, J and BBTO, often gives you another one.
Neat symmetry there. Okay, this really shows the depth you get from simple rules. Let's touch on those underlying mathematical connections, basic number properties.
Absolutely. The book really highlights how basic number theory, primes, composites, co-prime numbers, GCD1, is fundamental.
Right, like for the continuous stars.
Exactly. It determines whether you get one line or multiple loops. They even connect it back to ancient Greek mathematicians like Eratosthenes and Euclid, who first formalized these ideas.
Linking modern digital art to ancient math.
Huh.
I like it. Geometry's role.
It's all geometry, really. The angles you see inscribed, interior, exterior angles in the polygons and stars, they're all determined by how many vertices lie between the endpoints of the lines being drawn.
So you can almost predict angles just by counting vertices.
Pretty much, yeah. The book simplifies it that way.
Okay. And modular arithmetic by MOD.
Yeah, MOD is kind of the secret language here, because you're always working with a fixed number of vertices and you keep counting past n, you naturally wrap back around to the beginning.
Like hours on a clock, 13 o'clock is 1 o'clock.
Precisely. That wrapping around is exactly what modular arithmetic describes. The pentagram, N5J2, is a classic example of MOD5 in action.
Right, and those modular multiplicative inverses, MMI.
Oh, okay. A bit more advanced, but MMI is crucial for some specific image types, especially those one-time around spinners. In MOD math, the MMI of a number is kind of like its reciprocal.
Like 13?
Sort of, but within that specific MOD system. Finding the MMI helps predict and create images that complete a single non-overlapping loop with specific rotational properties.
Fascinating how abstract math creates concrete visuals. Okay, the book stresses playing around interactive exploration. How do people actually do that?
That's really Erfley's whole approach to learn by doing. He wants you, the listener, to use the tools he provides, the Excel files or the web version.
Yeah.
Just start plugging in numbers for N, S, P, and J. Change one, see what happens. Change another. Observe the patterns that emerge. It's about experimentation.
Sounds like a fun way to learn.
Yeah.
Discovery-based.
Totally. And the web version has that drawing mode feature.
Oh, yeah.
You click it, and it draws the image line by line, step by step. You can really see how the p-value makes the connections, how the cycles build up. It gives you a much deeper intuition.
That sounds incredibly helpful. What about teachers or people wanting more structure?
Yep, he's got that covered too. There are teacher-specific resources and these directed inquiry explainers.
Okay.
They give you more specific questions to investigate, sort of guiding you through exploring certain concepts or relationships between the parameters. So options for different learning styles.
That's great. Okay, so wrapping up. We've seen how electronic string art builds these incredibly diverse, beautiful images from simple counting and connecting rules.
Yeah, using those four parameters, N, S, P, J as the control knobs. And we've peeked under the hood at some of the elegant math behind it all.
And like you said, this is really just scratching the surface of what's in Steve Erfley's book, Electronic String Art, Rhythmic Mathematics. So much more to explore.
Absolutely. Loads more detail and examples in there.
So for our listeners, if this sounds cool, the next step is definitely to check out those resources from the book. Use the QR codes, find the web tools.
And just start creating. Play with N, S, P, and J and see what happens. Make your own discoveries.
And maybe a final thought to leave people with.
Yeah.
As you're playing with this or just thinking about it later.
Yeah.
Consider how often seemingly simple rules, like these counting rules, generate such unexpected beauty and complexity. Not just in art, but maybe in nature or other systems.
Mm. That's a great point. Like fractal patterns or biological growth. Where else do simple rules create complex beauty? Something to ponder.
Exactly. We really hope this deep dive has sparked some curiosity, maybe given you a new way to look at the connection between math and art.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly beautiful intersection.